This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
With India under pressure to supply coronavirus vaccines to its own people, Africa turns its focus to the U.S. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The African Union has dropped plans to secure COVID-19 vaccine doses directly from India's Serum Institute and said it's now exploring options with U.S. drug maker Johnson & Johnson. The WHO says fewer than 2% of the 690 million vaccine doses administered globally have been in Africa. That, it says, is causing concern as case counts continue to rise in at least 15 countries across the continent. The BBC's Rhoda Otiambo has more from Nairobi.
The initial plan by the Africa CDC was to get an additional doses from the institute to supplement the vaccines that are coming in from COVAX so that African countries can get enough of their population vaccinated. But now, because of what is happening in India, the rise of COVID-19 cases, this has now pushed the Africa CDC, of course, to drop the plans that it had. And also because it had also signed a deal with the U.S. drug maker Johnson & Johnson, which it had promised to supply the African Union with about 400 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
And we know that transporting and storing some vaccines can be difficult in some African nations because of cold storage and double dose requirements. So in a way, could this be a positive development because of the greater flexibility that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine offers?
It is a greater development because the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a single-dose vaccine. And looking at the storage of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, both these vaccines work for the continent, unlike the Pfizer and Moderna vaccine that require to be kept in ultra-cold storage facilities that many countries do not have.
The BBC's Rhoda Otiambo for us in Nairobi. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Checking the numbers now, global benchmarks are little changed today here in London. The FTSE 100 is ending its best week since January. Investors say optimism about vaccine rollouts and a plan to gradually reopen the hospitality industry here on Monday is helping to boost sentiment. Well, the long-haul flight route between New York to London is one of the busiest in the world, and with a U.S. vaccination program well underway, many Americans might be thinking about vacations abroad. But the British government today has said, not so fast. While it said international travel could restart as early as May 17th, a number of restrictions here will still remain in place. A traffic light system will categorize countries based on risk, and all passengers, even in green-listed nations, will be required to take a so-called gold standard PCR coronavirus test before they leave and once they arrive. The travel industry has expressed concern about the cost of getting tested and says travelers should be able to use cheaper lateral flow tests. Here's Johan Lundgrind, the boss of British discount carrier EasyJet.
The consequence is, of course, that this adds cost and it risks reversing the clock where flying has been for, you know, wealthy people who just can afford to pay this.
Those PCR tests cost as much as $160 each, but UK Transport Secretary Grant Shapps says he wants to lower that cost.
We want to see these tests be as cheap and convenient as possible. And I'm going to work with the travel industry and the private testing providers to drive down that cost. I won't spare those companies that seem to be profiteering, including potentially removing them from the recommended list.
While the government has outlined initial framework for reopening international travel, it hasn't yet said where individual countries will be placed on that traffic light system. To the French winemaking town of Chablis now, you may have seen photos on social media in the last couple of days of winemakers lighting large candles and hay bales on fire. It's not to lure would-be tourists with romantic post-pandemic vacations in mind. It's to keep their vines warm in the midst of a colder-than-usual freeze. Laurent Pinson owns a winery in the northernmost part of Burgundy. He's been lighting as many as 600 large candles across his 35-acre vineyard.
We use big candles, 5 kilograms candles. We light up during the night. We use approximately 500 candles for 1 hectare. So it makes a lot of work to light all the night to the vines to protect against the frost.
And just describe for us why you're having to do this. And do you think it will work?
The low temperature burned the buds when the frost is here. The water burns the buds and there is no grape, no leaves which are growing just after. So it's a big problem. And we don't have any more grapes for the vinification and to make the wine just after.
And do you know how much damage you've suffered already?
I think some parcels can have around 75% to 80% of damage during the last night. It depends on the parcel. If the facing is more to the sun, perhaps the buds are growing very early. And the parcels which are facing to the north, the buds are not really fragile at this time. Many, many good parcels like the Premier Cru and Grand Cru have a very important damage from the frost.
This isn't the first year this has happened. How does this affect your business? You need the grapes to make the wine, obviously. So what do you do now?
We can't do anything now. If the buds are dead or burned, we must wait. And we don't have any more grapes. It would be a very important economic problem for the next years, I think.
Is there anything that you can do? Is there any technology of any kind that could help you battle more extreme conditions that you have to deal with?
We must wait for perhaps new grapes, new plots, which are more resistant to the low temperature. It needs perhaps more 10 years to find the good plots which are resistant to the frost. The global warming is very good for the quality of wines, but it's sometimes very bad for the yields and the volumes of wine that we can have now.
So what does that mean long term for your business? Do you think you'll be able to stay in winemaking?
Yes, for sure. For sure. This is my job. I love my job. And so I want to continue to make wine, to work in the vineyards. It's a wonderful job. So we must continue to do our passion.
And I guess just one last question. How is your business doing? Because, you know, we saw this time last year, a lot of French winemakers were having to turn their wine into hand sanitizer because of the pandemic. They couldn't sell it. Now you're faced with potentially damaged crop because of the frost. What is your survival looking like for the next year or so?
We hope that the pandemic will be over in the few months because it's important to begin again to sell wine everywhere in the world. The future, I think, will be good if we have enough wine to propose to our clients or our distributor through the world. When everyone will get the vaccine, everyone can travel again and visit our country and travel through the world and drink wine everywhere in the world. So I hope that it will be better in the few months.
All the best of luck to you. Laurent Ponson, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Well, Laurent sent us a video from his vineyards. You can head to my Twitter page at Victoria Craig to check it out. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Oscar Gomez was a Chicano student activist in the 90s, a radio DJ and a rising star.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate. Everyone had a crush on him.
He was a voice of people. Of people who didn't have a voice.
Until his sudden and mysterious death. What happened to Oscar? Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.